I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City, online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Shannon, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
Yellow. How y'all doing? Welcome to Sports Talk 95.3, The Score. You can tell it's July. I mean, I'm seeing people on Twitter that are usually talking sports and doing a bunch of other stuff, talking about, today is Queen guitarist Brian May's birthday, and the guy's like, so, Brian May, who, I mean, this guy is brilliant. He's got like a PhD in like astrophysics or something like that. Aside from being a kick-ass rock guitarist. And it's like, favorite Queen album, Night at the Opera. I know it's kind of cliche, but wow. Favorite Queen song, Death on Two Legs from Night at the Opera. Best Queen solo, Stone Cold Crazy from an earlier album. So this is what I've been doing with my downtime, which is, I guess kind of sad. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, even though we're going to get to Fentress in a couple minutes. Earlier, and this is just to ponder, the Twitter handle that Nick was following throughout, it was for baseball. So you could pick a guy from your favorite team, go into the past, take that player, add it to this year's team with three critical parameters to follow. He could not have helped the team win a championship, could not have been an MVP, and could not have been a Hall of Famer. So, like, for example, I could have picked Mattingly, except for he's the 85 MVP. And I to this moment, I haven't come up with a Yankee. Because my favorite ones were in the 70s when they won it. In the 80s, Mattingly was kind of the best one, and I can't take him. And, of course, in the 90s and 2000s, they all won titles. We threw it over to Oregon players that could not have made the NFL or could not have played for a conference championship team. We'll kick that one with the proverbial can down the road, but now we'll lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline because it's that time on a Thursday. It's the opening segment of the program in the 4 o'clock hour when we get our view from the north.
Ow!
Yeah, for two decades, the Oregonian. Half a decade, NBC Sports Northwest. And now a new gig. You can still catch up on Twitter. Follow along. Use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how is life treating you these days?
Not bad, man. I'm still kind of chilling on my vacay in between jobs. And I get started on Monday at my new job, so I'm just kind of trying to get in as much bad golf as possible before the S hits the fan and teams start practicing football, and I got to be there for it.
Well, you know, to get in bad golf generally for most of us just means go out and play, so that's not really a challenge. You know, I was thinking about how time flies when in 2008, when I first moved over here, and we were going to do our pregame show prior to the opener against Washington, Justin came to me and says, a buddy of mine who works for the Oregonian is going to join us. And that was the first time we met, now going on 11 years ago. But let the folks in on what's the new gig. What are you going to be doing?
First of all, can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm moving over to the Athletic, which most people know about. It's an online website. There is a paywall, but the whole idea behind it is that they're trying to do different style of journalism, return back to more of the long form journalism that's not disappeared, but people have gone toward more of the clickbait model. How can we get clicks, throw up more, as much stuff as possible, whereas at the Athletic it's more quality over quantity. And I just decided that I needed a change and I wanted to do something different, and so I'm going to work for them. However, I will be covering the same old stuff. As a matter of fact, I'll be doing Seahawks and Oregon football, which obviously I was doing Oregon football for most of the last 14 years, but in between, when I wasn't doing Oregon football, I was doing Seahawks football. Last year, I shifted over from primary Ducks to primary Seahawks with some Ducks involved. Now, I'll still be doing primarily Seahawks, but I'll be doing a little bit more Ducks than I was doing last year for NBC Sports Northwest.
No, sounds like a great opportunity when, like, Tyson and some of the guys we knew moved over there. I sprung for the subscription. It's great. It really is quality work. Sounds like an awesome opportunity.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You know, bottom line is where I was working, you know, part of the reason why I went to NBC Sports was to do television and still be able to write, and we're not doing as much television. And I'm like, well, if we're not going to be doing as much television and I have a chance to go somewhere that's what I think to be a much stronger journalistic entity, I said, you know what? I think it's time for me to take another challenge and move on to do something else.
All right. Well, we're big fans of The Athletic. Wish you the best of luck and happy you're going to stay around. So, yeah. Your Twitter account, you posted a poll, thought it was really interesting. What happens next? Ducks in the college football playoffs? Blazers in the NBA Finals, Oregon State wins a bowl game, Ducks in the Final Four, and my first thought was, unless you mean the Duck women, I'm not sure any of that is happening this year. I voted Oregon football in the playoffs, so two things. What's been getting the most support, and who did you vote for?
Most support by far is Ducks football at 59%, and then all the rest of them are on the teams. You know, I should have put M in there for men's basketball. I was thinking of four things that hadn't happened in a long time, and so that's why I went with those four. Although, I mean, football hasn't been that long, actually, but more than several years. And Ducks women, to me, like, they just went to the Final Four. You know, so
yeah.
And, you know, the GOAT is back, so it's like it would be tough for them not to get to the Final Four, so that would have been a given to me if I wasn't even thinking about that. So obviously I was talking about the men. But, you know, I'm kind of torn, but I actually think and I voted for Oregon State football because
what?
I think it's going to be a lot easier for them to get back to bowl eligible and make a bowl game and win a game than it's going to be for either of the other three things to happen. I don't see how the Blazers are ever going to be able to navigate in the West and get to the finals unless they add that third legitimate piece. And I don't think Hassan Whiteside is that guy. Because the West now, I mean, even though the Warriors are down, good Lord, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Rockets with Westbrook are now interesting again. Like, it's just going to be so tough for them to get there unless they can get, you know, maybe some luck on their side and some injuries. And then the Final Four for basketball, that's so hard to do. And if you're relying on five-star one-and-done, that's going to be really, really difficult, at least all the last couple of years. They've had three five-star one-and-dones. Now, they did reach the Elite 16 last year, so that was close. I'll give them credit for that. They lost a ton of people from that team, so now you're almost starting over again. And then football, you know how I feel about football. Like, if they don't do it this year, it could be a while, unless Tyler Shuck does end up being the guy. So, to me, the safest bet is Oregon State.
You know, another, to tie it in, your colleague Jason Quick, who's, you know, been embedded with the Blazers forever, I saw he actually used my betting site, which has the Blazers over-under for wins at 44.5. I mean, they've covered the over, I think, five of the last 6 years. And you mentioned All of a sudden, the L.A. teams are better. Denver's good. Utah's legit. Houston is, you know, going to need like four basketballs. So, right. what? You know, we were joking earlier this week. I'm like, the only disappointing thing is, too bad Houston didn't still have Melo, because there would have been a fistfight on the floor for the Bulls. So, what's your gut saying? They going to beat that number again, or like, that's a tough call?
Here's the question I would have. When in history has a team reached the conference finals, retained their best two players, and finished nine games worse the next year?
It's crazy.
Has that ever happened without a major injury? Like, I can't imagine that ever happened. Nine games, it was 53. To me, that, like, I want to go restart up my online sports betting account and put some money on the over. Like, how do they not go over? And, yeah, maybe the West. I mean, the West has always been strong, though. It's not like they're I guess you could say they're a little stronger, but are they strong enough for Portland to fall nine games? Now, Nurkic will be out for a while, but Whiteside mitigates that for a bit. I think we're going to see a huge jump from Zach Collins. So, yeah, I would have to bet the over because I can't imagine them not winning more than 45. At least I think they're winning at least 48 games. Like, to me, that would be like the floor, so I would go over.
Yeah, so would I, but as somebody who bets, you know one thing for sure. Man, if it looks that easy, it ain't that easy.
This is true. This is why the sports books are in business, right?
Yep.
Everyone thinks they know. When you
No, the best conversation I ever had, the first time I went to Vegas with my dad. Now, we're going back to about 1969 and the old dunes. And we had just landed. We drove from McCarran and we're going up the escalator. And my dad looks at me. My eyes are like big going through the casino. And he goes, "You really like this, don't you?" And I went, "Yeah." And he goes, "Look around. The chandeliers, the marble. This ain't built on winners."
Exactly. 100%.
That's perfect. Talk with Aaron Fentress of The Athletic. I saw you posted a countdown to the start of the Bear season. And so 12 wins last year. They don't advance because of Cody Parkey's double doink. You know, I look at this team, and that linebackers core is the best since, Otis Wilson, Marshall, and Singletary. I don't know if the Packers got better, but how much are you loving what your Bears might do this year?
I'm very excited. I'm not going to lie. This is a good opportunity for them to definitely get to the Super Bowl. For me, though, it all comes down to one Mitchell Trubisky, my friend. He's got to take the next step, and I think he will. I think he's legit. Like, I was pretty excited when the Bears got Cutler until I saw him throwing off his back foot into triple coverage, and I was like, ah, crap, this isn't going to work out. But Trubisky has the goods. He's got the arm. He's got the moxie, and that boy can scoot, man.
Yep.
I mean, I've labeled him since his rookie preseason debut. I've called him the right-handed Steve Young, and I'm sticking with that. Like, I think this guy is going to be legit. I'm not saying, you know, he's going to win multiple MVPs or anything like that, but he's going to be a legitimate Super Bowl caliber quarterback, especially with that defense. So I'm looking forward to the season for sure.
Wow, no pressure there. Just the most efficient quarterback in history, an MVP, and a Super Bowl winner with seven TDs.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. No problem.
I saw you also posted something that cracked me up. We were talking about it. The NFL players bothered by their rating on Madden 20. I mean,
oh my goodness.
I get fans. That's what they do. I know you play, but great player like Keenan Allen, who actually gets to, you know, produce in reality, how odd is it that they would even be bothered by something like this?
It is so funny, and I think one.
What was that? I think we might have had a El Dropo Mundo. You did a little El Dropo on us, but you're back.
But sorry about this, man. I heard what you asked, though. So I was saying, part of it's the ego, right?
Right.
And then I think the other part of it is, I don't think they really get
fact that Madden ratings, they're not structured to the point where you have to be in the 90s and everything to be good. Like, I think people think, I got to be 99, or it's a slight. And so Keenan Allen cracked me up because, I got 88 speed. 88 speed on that game was really good. He's not, he's not a 4.3 guy, so him to think he should be 95 is ridiculous. And then he complained about a straight 69. He's a receiver, and he's really thin. I stood right next to him in the locker room before with his shirt off. He's a thin guy. So 69 strength for a receiver is not bad. Linemen are in the 85 to 95. So I think that was funny. It's kind of cute, but it's also the ego and the youth. Their youth causes them to believe they're still more than they are, even though they're already really good. And in the NFL, they want more affirmation.
Amazing. What one final thought. Before I went on vacation, you were telling us about the cutthroat baseball tournament you and your son were involved in. So I'm not a video game guy, but from Madden, any of the EA games, baseball, basketball, college football, what have been the one or two games that have dominated and got a workout at the Fentress household?
Which video games do you play the most?
Yeah.
Oh, we play MLB The Show the most. We will play Madden. We'll play 2K. But we have legitimately played 162 games with the Cubs before a season, and we're in the middle of 162 game season right now. Right there, I mean, if you play an entire season, 162 games, you have to play 10 Madden seasons to equate that. So I definitely think MLB The Show is the one we play the most. I would say solo. It's pretty even. Whatever season we're in is what my son will send me. He'll play a career mode, MLB, or Madden, or 2K basketball. So it's pretty equal there. But together, it's baseball.
Man, your level of efficiency is off the charts. Folks, he's Aaron Fentress winding down his vacation, prepping to start a new segment of his career with The Athletic. Again, still on Twitter, at Aaron J. Fentress. Good to talk to you. And again, congrats and best of luck on the new gig. And look forward to talking all season long.
And look forward. I'll be down there for more games than I was last year, so that means more halftime hot takes.
All right. We'll look forward to it, man. Have a good one. Halftime hot takes. Depends. First, you got to have either one of the treats, one of the O cookies in hand, or sometimes a nice little fudge brownie. Oh. How's the best way to put it? They really do pamper the media during football season. Nothing is quite like going to a bowl game, which my first time I was like, this happens at every bowl every year.
Trying to get into the back of your head, trying to buy you over with sweets and cookies. It's like, I can't say anything bad because I got really good snacks.
Well, the first thing that struck me when, because the first bowl game I ever went to was the Natty against Auburn. And, then the next year, we went to the Rose Bowl, and I remember we were sitting around because they also, the Rose Bowl's insane. You get a little badge, and you basically can eat and drink for free for like 4 days. I mean, it's absolutely real, and it's spectacular. And I remember thinking, there's something wrong with the average media member who covers this, because let's face it, how many people really sung the praises of the BCS? And so you basically, for 361 days, you'd be like, the BCS this, the BCS that. And then all of a sudden, you're sitting in the media lounge and like, gosh darn BCS, yes, I would like some more free wine, please. Freaking BCS, yes, that filet mignon looks lovely. What about that? What the hell is the Yeah, more shrimp would be divine.
You know what? I think getting less of these people involved in more computers would be better. I agree. Another round of 19 bourbons, please. Thank you.
I discovered how much when they announced, okay, 2013 was over. Oregon had beaten Texas, Mac Brown's last game, as well as Nick Aliotti's last game. Mariota's second Bowl victory as quarterback that would kind of set the stage for their return to the national championship game via the first ever college football playoff. And I went back over from 98 through 2013, and it was like the BCS, you could really drop the hammer on them for 3 years. 2001, Oregon absolutely deserved to be in over Nebraska. Nobody disputes that. 2004, they got caught up in the reason I've always harped on four teams. There were three unbeatens. Oklahoma lost to USC in the BCS championship game. Auburn, ironically, I always felt, an SEC team went unbeaten and got snubbed from the national championship game with that million-dollar backfield, Jason Campbell at quarterback, Cadillac Williams, and Ronnie Brown. And then I think in 2007, but, you know, they had to end up with a two-loss team in the national championship game, and that was the year Les Miles got his natty at LSU. Otherwise, I mean, there were some years that it was a no-brainer. I mean, the two unbeaten teams got to play for the championship, like Oregon, Auburn, like USC, Oklahoma. USC, Texas.
What about the Alabama LSU year?
Oh yeah, when they rematch.
Yeah, they played two weeks
you
ago.
It's like you could debate it, but it wasn't like completely out of their rear end. Yeah, you know what I mean? You could have made an equal case for either one. And again, if they had listened to me in 1998 and just went with a 14 playoff, they would have gotten in. Not going to happen. Not going to happen. Not going to happen. All right. 284-8571. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, if you want to jump on in. Somebody just texted, I wish I checked out this before we let Aaron go. Safe to say Fentress would want Robbie Gold on his Bears team this year. Actually, more so last year.
Hey, Papa!
Memory serves correctly. Gold was the most accurate. Gold? What the hell?
Gold.
No, it's Robbie Gould.
No, it's Gold. Like the
Are you sure about that?
Yes.
I mean, having such...
I have literally never heard someone call him Gould before. He's not a ghost. He's not a ghoul.
I think I'm having one of my senior moments here.
It's Gold. It's Robbie Gould. That's what it's been.
Is Gold. Yes. You're right.
Wow.
What the hell was that?
Hey, Papa!
Let's go to break, man.
My point being, this year is one thing. He was, in fact, the most accurate kicker in the NFL last year at 97.1%. So we'll take a break. We will come back. We'll have more sports talk, and we'll get to my conversation with a couple of guys who are coming to town with their traveling comedy and music show. Steve Martin, Martin Short, will be part of our next segment, 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk, your home for the Coors Light scoreboard and the refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
I feel like I played pretty solid. I missed in the right spot, or right spots all day. You know, one bad one there on 17. That's going to cost you, but didn't really make any putts and didn't take advantage of anything to really go low. You know, 3-under, definitely didn't shoot myself out of it, so I'm okay with that.
As Nick would say, Bryce Koepka, Brooks Koepka, looking for his fifth major. Right there, -3, two shots off the lead. We'll get to the leaderboard in a little bit. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. As we welcome you back to Sports Talk on 95.3, the Score of the Thursday edition. Appreciate the time of Aaron J. Fentress of the Atlantic.
Nope.
I did it again.
That's a dollar.
I think we need to start making that a dollar penalty.
Considering now we have two friends of the of BFFs of the show that work there, it's a dollar.
All right.
You did it
from this point forward.
Yeah, and also
grandfathering in
from this point forward. Also, yesterday off air, we were recording a promo, and you were talking about how we're going to have to.
Nope, the Atlantic. The Pacific.
You specifically
the
said
Indian Ocean
right before you started recording the promo. He's of the Athletic. It looked like you wrote down, at least maybe you scribbled something. You definitely didn't write out the word Athletic. You could have written down Atlantic, but you said, and tomorrow on the show we'll have Aaron Fentress of the Atlantic, and you just go, oh
yeah, actually let's not say what right. I said.
But just like I don't know how it doesn't click with you.
So were you a Game of Thrones guy?
Yes.
Okay, so what did you think about couple days ago, the Emmy nominations came out, and they set a record for the most primetime Emmy nominations for a show in a single year. You think that's like one of those deals where, you know, a guy gets a gold glove because he's always been a great defender, and it's kind of a lifetime achievement award?
I mean, the show was visually very good. The show, if you had watched it on mute and you were just able to experience it as a movie and you were there to enjoy the shots and the CGI and the technical aspects that went into it and the set design, minus that one time the Starbucks cup snuck in, minus, you know, I mean, if you just were to just to take in the show, like just taking it in would be it was spectacular. It was very good. It was horribly written and it was rushed. And it was rushed on a show that decided to take a year and a half to almost 2 years off between seasons because they wanted to get it right. And the only thing they got right was the CGI and the visual effects and the costumes and the set design and, you know, all of these things, which are spectacular. Like, I mean, I watched, you know, making of the Battle of the Bastards episode, or not Battle of the Bastards, Battles of Winterfell, which is the one between, you know, the zombies and the living, the walkers and everything. And, like, it took them, like, 3 months of filming in the middle of the night in, like, Scotland, where it rained most of the time. And they had to film at night because they wanted this battle to take place at night for some reason. And, like, it took them forever and to get it right and to get all of these pieces together and the things they create. All of that is spectacular, and they're probably going to win. The writing on the show was god awful.
How about this? If you leave a Starbucks on the set,
oh, you should be disqualified.
No, yeah. I'm just saying 10%. They should have lost 3 nominations.
Yeah, you definitely shouldn't win most ever when you leave a Starbucks cup on that show. In that show, come on.
It's unbelievable.
Just put it under
the table. I found that the 8 nominations for best drama, Better Call Saul, I watched that. Bodyguard on Netflix was wild. It was about a British bodyguard protecting, you know, someone, not the queen, not, you know, Harry or one of those guys. Then Game of Thrones, Killing Eve, BBC with Sandra Oh and Jodie Comer as one of the great psycho assassins of all time. Ozark with Jason Bateman. I didn't watch Pose on FX. Succession, I didn't watch. And show you how times have changed. One network TV show, This Is Us on NBC, which we love. Now, kind of interesting to see Barry on HBO as a comedy. He's an assassin. I'll tell you what, if I had to pick, if you have a good sense of humor, I would absolutely say watch Fleabag on Amazon. It's one of those things, if you've ever watched Modern Family, and it's the one camera angle, and the cast is kind of in on it. Well, this is a case where just the lead actress is aware of the camera. She is spectacular. The Good Place on NBC. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon is terrific. Russian Doll is good. Veep. You know, everybody tells me, how the hell does a Seinfeld fan not watch Veep?
Veep?
I don't know. I don't have an answer for that.
Veep is so bleeping funny. from start to finish, every single episode, there are just tiny little callbacks. There are tiny little jokes that just, you know, not stuff that you have to be like watching super intently on to be able to get, but just, you know, callbacks to like an episode before or whatever that are just extremely hilarious in a way that, like, kind of like Arrested Development, but it doesn't take an entire season to have something be funny when you're watching it the second time because you're picking up from the first episode.
Right.
Anyways, it's spectacular.
I've seen a couple of episodes.
Oh my gosh, it is just...
I usually laugh.
You would enjoy that show. It is very funny.
I think I need to... That's the one I really need to kind of get back to season one.
And if... I mean, talk about like a perfect finale. There is something about comedy shows with the way that they have their idea for their character arcs and what they're going to do on the show and then like anything after the show as well. Veep's finale, I think it was a little bit longer of an episode because they're normally like a half hour. This one might have been like 45 minutes or an hour. It was spectacular. I cried. I cried watching a comedy show's finale because it was perfect. It was just, it was the right amount of funny, it was the right amount of, oh, I can't believe, like, I'm so glad that happened, or I'm glad happened.
No spoiler alerts.
Well, no, well, I can't remember exactly what happened, but, you know, the characters are saying goodbye to each other, and you're realizing, like, that's over, and it was just, it was the perfect season finale I've seen on a show in a long, long time. I think another one is another comedy show, Scrubs, the end of, I think it was season 8, because season 9 moved to a different network, and the show became really bad. The end to season 8, where it's JD is standing outside the hospital, and they've got the big montage, and you see the future of what happens with his daughter and Turk's son growing up together. Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah, Scrubs had a good run where it was really clever, kind of ahead of itself. With his, you know, little fantasy sequences during the middle of conversations.
So funny.
But I agree. I was watching a special the other day, and it's, you know, TV to some known as the vast wasteland, the boob tube, the idiot tube. I get that. But there's, because of the competition between Netflix and, you know, the premium cable networks and Amazon and Hulu, BBC America. If you haven't seen Killing Eve, it's fantastic. Ozark, Laura Linney, Jason Bateman is off the charts. There's some really good comedies. Some of the actresses in these comedies are outstanding. Christina Applegate in Dead to Me. Her name is Phoebe Waller-Bridge in Fleabag. That might be the one that I recommend as highly as anything. For a limited series, also Sharp Objects with Amy Adams is really good. All right, let's get to it. Saturday night, show in town at the magnificent Cuthbert Amphitheater featuring Steve Martin and Martin Short. We were actually able to steal some of their time today, and... this is a little offbeat and not our typical interview, but check it out. Let us know what you think. 95.3 The Score. In my nearly 30 years hosting a radio show, I've had the chance to speak with some terrific guests and the two guys on the line, legends in the field of comedy and entertainment. Their Now You See Them, Soon You Won't tours at our Cuthbert Amphitheater Saturday night at 7 o'clock. My pleasure to welcome in Steve Martin and Martin Short. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your time. How's life treating you guys?
It's great. And may I say, in 40 years of career, talking to... interviewers on the phone, this is our most exciting interview.
Wow, you guys have really set the bar high. I gotta say to Steve, my family and I were at the Fountain Blue Hotel in Miami in the spring of
opening for Ann Margaret.
Yes, a young comedian played the banjo, did the nose on the microphone trick, the tongue through the napkin. We were rolling on the floor. When you think back,
I can tell you a quick anecdote. I know we're gonna rush.
Go ahead.
I was expecting the worst because the audience, first you have to understand, it's like 1968 or something like that, 69. It's the era of the hippie movement, and I had really long hair. I wore turquoise jewelry. I had a big, thick, ugly beard, and I wore a long frock coat. And I was opening for Ann Margaret, and I looked out, and it's all sort of older people. And I thought, this is going to be a disaster. So I went out, and I did the show, and it just killed. And later, I talked to Roger Smith, who's married to Ann Margaret. I said, what was that? Why did I go over? I should be everything they hate. And he said, because they look at you, and they think, aw, my son.
Well, it was spectacular. So the show here in town, I mentioned Saturday night, you two began a 3.5-decade friendship on the set of Three Amigos. You've done movies together, the Netflix special. I'm kind of curious, this effort to do live shows touring the country, how did this idea come about and all come together?
Go ahead, Marty. Well, we were asked to interview each other a few years ago, close the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival in Chicago, and that it was just a one-off, but we were a hit, and we also had a riot doing it. It was so much fun, so we thought, oh, let's do it again, and then that slowly morphed into more of a full show. Steve brought his band, Steve Canyon Rangers. I brought Jeff Babko, my piano guy, and we combined shows, and here we are talking to you.
Yep. Our greatest radio interview ever.
Well, finally, you've made it to market.
Up 140. Until like a minute ago, I thought it wasn't, but now
you needed to be influenced.
You know, when you
I needed to talk.
When you consider the diverse body of work you've each compiled and how many in the industry you've influenced, I'm kind of curious, who were the performers who inspired you to, you know, pursue entertainment as a career? I guess since we share a first name, why don't you go first, Steve?
No, wait a minute. Sorry, I have a hacking cough. But don't worry, you can't catch it because I checked it out scientifically. I can't go over the phone. But... Can you repeat the question? Because I got a little lost.
Okay, no, I was saying when you consider your career and, you know, who you've influenced, I'm curious to know who kind of inspired you to get into the entertainment.
So many people. That's the problem. And because I'm 73, a lot of younger people don't know really who they are. Some were unknown, or people who weren't very famous, like a comedian at Disneyland named Wally Bogue, and some were wildly famous, like Jerry Lewis and Jack Benny on the radio, and obviously Laurel and Hardy, whom I loved, and I think Marty did too.
Absolutely.
Martin, how about you? You know, hailing from Canada?
Well, for me it was, I just watched American television, or movies, so it was Jerry Lewis and Jonathan Winters and, you know, people like that, Nichols and May.
Oh yeah, Nichols and May, Lenny Bruce. Jeez.
Yeah. How about
all right, we have time for one more question.
Dick Van Dyke.
Okay, one more question because I don't want to get in trouble. The Now You See Them, Soon You Won't show at our Cuthbert Amphitheater on Saturday. So for folks who might be unfamiliar, how would you describe what we can all expect to see when you take the stage and put on this performance Saturday night?
Go ahead, Marty. You've got the answer.
Comedy.
That's what we're there for. We want it to be the funniest show people have seen, if not, you know, in a long time, at least in the last 2 months.
Well, Steve, rumor
Catherine O'Hara describes it as a children's show for adults.
Okay. Yep. Well, my wife tells me I'm both, and I know comedy is not pretty, but, you know, so on behalf of those of us who have enjoyed your work all these years, thanks for the laughs, all the fun. I wish you both well. Travel safe to and from our city. Have a great show. And thank you so much for taking some time to talk with us on the radio.
Thanks a lot. And it turned out it was the greatest hit radio interview we've ever done. So thank you.
All right.
Absolutely.
All right. You love you guys. Have a great show Saturday.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Pretty cool chance to catch up with a couple of comic legends who will be in town again Saturday night at the Cuthbert. The Now You See Them, Soon You Won't tour. 7 o'clock showtime. Doors open at 5:30. Online, you can get your tickets, ticketswest.com or at thecuthbert.com. Take a break. Back with more sports talk. 95.3 The Score.
He's 0-4 against Ohio State. It's hard to swallow that he's 1-3 in bowl games, that he's 2-2 against Michigan State. Like, you're supposed to roll over Michigan State talent-wise. I think the biggest issue for Harbaugh, too, is it's not as if he's not getting top-level talent. I think he's had a top 25 recruiting class every single year that he's been there, so he's got the talent. Everything on paper leads you to believe that at the very least he should be competing for a Big Ten championship, and he hasn't even been in that game.
Interesting take, L. Duncan on ESPN, as when you, I guess, what's the best way to put this? If you had to rate or evaluate the temperature of certain coaches' respective seats.
Is it that time?
Yeah. I would say Harbaugh is top five. I think Gus Malzahn is well up the list.
You know what that means, Steve? It's,
what?
It's time to go
you
to
found it?
CoachesHotSeat.com.
I just want to, you know, it's amazing how you blink your eyes. This is his fifth year since Brady Hoke was asked to leave. And it just goes to show the difference between taking job X or job Michigan. He's won 10 games, 10 games, 8 games, then 10 games. He's been in a major bowl, Peach Bowl, Outback, Citrus Bowl, you know, certainly second-tier bowls, and winning 38 games over 4 years isn't cutting the mustard, despite the fact their last 3 years, or the 4 years under Brady Hoke, they won 31 games, so they've upgraded. But, you know, Michigan, like a lot of other programs, especially the Blue Bloods, I mean, who's kidding who? You know, you could talk about what Alabama is now, but over the history of the game we love, Michigan is up there with Notre Dame and USC, certainly Alabama, and, well, you know the list. Ohio State is on that list, but... So what's it called again?
CoachesHotSeat.com. They've got their top 30 coaches. Again, this is for the preseason going into 2019. They update not all that often in the offseason, but I'm sure every couple of weeks they'll get the updates. Coach Harbaugh's not on this list.
Not at all.
He's not in the top 30.
Not in the top 30?
Not in the top 30. Not in the top 30, Steve.
How about
not a hot seat.
Clay Helton?
Clay Helton, number one. That is the hottest seat in the country.
Would that be a yes?
For some reason, there's a lot of powerhouses up at the top, like Chris Ash at Rutgers and Randy Edsall of UConn, who I learned coaches UConn.
That's Which interesting
he
to
might
say
be on
the
list.
Least.
He might be on the list because UConn won't be playing in a conference soon, and there's like no place for them to go because there's no Big East in football, and they can't play in conference or wherever the AAC or whatever they were.
All right.
Yeah, the American.
Let me just take it. Is anybody in this conference on a warm chair? Just a yes or no before, because I'm just thinking, obviously, it can't be anybody from the Ducks. Stanford solid, Leach solid, Peterson solid. You mentioned USC. The other coaches are new.
There's two in the Pac-12 that are on the list. They're right back to back to each other. They're
Chip
in the
Kelly?
They're in the top 25. Chip Kelly is on the list. He's on the 21st hottest seat in America. Right above him.
Really? And oh, you said Helton was one.
Helton's one. Okay, sorry. So three. So two others. Chip Kelly, the hottest seat, number 21. Number 20, Kevin Sumlin, Arizona. Hot seat.
His second year, huh?
Number 20, hottest seat.
Wow.
Also, I think this list has really something against Lovie Smith for some reason, because I remember checking it
last
year.
Well, they just are an embarrassment to the sport.
Well, there's that, but, you know, it is Illinois. Like, why would anybody want to play football in Illinois? I would think, I mean, Northwestern, probably a lot better of a school if you can get in to go there, I would think.
How about Jimbo Fisher? Too soon?
Jimbo is not on the list.
Nah, just after 1 year, I don't think that was... yeah, you know, the problem is I'm thinking of the big guns who need to contend with guys like Jimbo Fisher. It's like, expectations couldn't be any lower, I don't think.
There are some interesting names in the top 10, though, ones that we'll recognize. I'll work our way up to the big surprise. Number 10, Mike Gundy.
Really?
Yeah, Oklahoma State, he's been there a really long time. They've gotten kind of close very often, and then they...
They might have, in 2012, gotten snubbed from a shot at a natty.
Yeah, they've come really close, and then, you know, their defense lets them down.
After last year, how stable is Gary Patterson at TCU? See,
Gary Patterson is, I thought I saw his visor on the list. There's a lot of guy with visors on this list. Gary Patterson is not on the list. Gus Malzahn at Auburn.
Yeah, I mentioned that. That's kind of a no-brainer.
He's eighth. And then the big surprise, Willie Taggart, Florida State, his second year.
That's not really a surprise.
Fifth hottest.
I'll tell you the truth.
It's a little low.
Too early for Scott Frost, even though they went 4-8 last year after an awful start. He actually made them semi-respectable. You said the fact that they put the coach of Rutgers on there goes to show that this might not be the most valid list we've ever come across.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure what goes into the rankings, but you've got an Arkansas, BYU, San Jose City, New Mexico State, Ball City, UTEP, New Mexico, Rice. USF, FAU, SMU. Like, there's a lot of like random schools that maybe if you kind of
and that's top 25,
that top 30. So there's a lot of schools that maybe if you looked into how this coach has been doing and what the program should be doing and
right, you have
are
to
they
a,
progressing
know, and B care
right? Yeah. So you know, once the season starts and you realize that, oh wow, Michigan, you know, is 4-1 after five weeks and they're not doing so great. And there goes Harbaugh doing his Harbaugh stuff again, talking about milk all the time. It's getting kind of old. Really sick of the khakis out here in Michigan. It's very cold. He should be wearing snow pants. He'll rise up the list. It'll happen.
How about, never mind. I keep forgetting that Chad Morris, even though he went 2-10 at Arkansas, although they've got some expectations, that's a fan base who views their program through a lens that I don't think most share, to say the least. Who else was I thinking of? Brett Bielema. What the hell ever happened to Brett Bielema?
He's
not even a coach anymore.
He's not a coach.
He left. He had success at Wisconsin, and then he took the Arkansas job and never won more than 8 games, went 4-8 and was like, you're out of the contest.
Fell apart very quickly.
It's over. O-V-E-R. Excuse me. All right. So with that thought in mind, looking ahead to the 5 o'clock hour. By the way, Jim Harbaugh had some choice words for his former nemesis at Ohio State, Suburban Meyer. That might be worth a thought or two. Plus, you know, NFL camps broke. We've got the British Open to talk about. So hang tight. The 5 o'clock hour of sports talk is next. 95.3 The Score.
What did we just see? Holy smokes!